It's a big news story. It's good. Good for ASU. Good for the Red Wolves. You know, be good for Arkansas football.
We certainly hope so. And we're going to move on to some other topics now.
Some less important topics.
Some less important topics.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've got a lot going on, of course, in Congress. One thing I want to start off with, though, just this morning, the war in Iraq is now officially over. The American flag was lowered there in a ceremony this morning, I understand.
Right.
The big question now, I guess, is what the future holds for that country and what our relationship is going to be. And the scary part, I guess, is what influence Iran might have.
Well, those are the questions that everybody wants to know. And the truth is, and I think most people realize this, had we stayed in Iraq another 10 years, we may still not know the answer to those questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just going to depend, you know, on how the Iraqi people want to do this. I think there's a very good chance that Iran has a big influence there, much larger than we want to see. But, you know, that's their next-door neighbor, and given the Shia population, et cetera, in Iraq and sort of in that neighborhood, so to speak, I'm not sure we can do a lot about it. But, you know, I think the future there is a little cloudy, a little uncertain, and we probably will always want to maintain some sort of presence in the region, and I think we're going to continue to train troops there and, you know, have a very low-profile presence there, but no more combat troops.
Well, we've had some military issues here at home as well. You've been working, I know, on a glitch in the system, I guess you'd call it, regarding military death benefits, which was brought to light by an unusual circumstance here.
Yeah, we had a situation in the Arkansas National Guard almost 2 years ago where a young man who had actually been to Iraq twice and received the Bronze Star when he was on active duty there, when he rolled out of active duty, he went with the Arkansas National Guard. He lived over in Greenwood, which is right outside of Fort Smith, right there next to Fort Chaffee. And he was doing his typical weekend training at Fort Chaffee, just like, you know, Arkansas Guardsmen do all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing it Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday night, instead of him charging the government $40 or whatever it was for a hotel room to stay in some local hotel, his commander told him, just go home and just stay there, save the government money, be with your family, and come back at, you know, whatever time of the morning. He died in the night.
Mm.
And now the Pentagon is saying that he was not on duty, which is kind of crazy because he was under orders. Had they called him in the middle of the night and said, get over here, he would have been there.
Right.
Had he gone out and had a DWI that night, he would have been subject to the Code of Military Justice. So they're not giving him, his family, the death gratuity. We're working on this. We've gotten this fixed going forward. We haven't gotten it fixed for his family yet, but we continue to work on it.
On another military issue was getting the Purple Heart for the soldiers who were shot, one fatally, at the recruiting center in Little Rock.
Yeah, this, y'all remember a couple of years ago, we had a radicalized Muslim, a guy I think was originally from Little Rock, but he'd gone to maybe Nashville, Tennessee, and then he went to Yemen. And he got radicalized over there and came back and wanted to kill American soldiers. And so he's in Little Rock, and he goes to the recruiting station, and he shoots two people, two soldiers in uniform that are there at the recruiting station in Little Rock, two Army guys, and, you know, kills one of them. The family wants the Purple Heart for the deceased soldier. And certainly under the circumstances, we should give it to him, because if you look at the Purple Heart language, it says for international acts of terrorism. Well, that's clearly what this was. That's what the guy claimed it was. He not only told the prosecutor and told other people, but he also told the press. That's why he did it. He wanted to kill Americans in uniform. I mean, it's clearly an act of terrorism. It just so happened to happen here on our soil. But nonetheless, the Pentagon is saying that he's not entitled to the Purple Heart, and we're having them kind of revisit that. We haven't made as much progress on that as we have the other, but I think in the end we're going to get this done as well.
Well, the question there is, you know, whether it's a combat zone in the war that we're looking at now, the war situation on terrorism, it really, we are in a global combat zone.
We really are. In fact, you know, back under President Bush's administration, when people were, like the Arkansas National Guard, when they were active to actually go down on the border to protect our border, they got the ribbon that said Global War on Terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were stationed here, and anyway, this is to me, this is a fairly easy request. It's just a matter of kind of getting through the Pentagon paperwork. They said one of the reasons they're concerned about it is because if they do this for this family, then they may have to do it for the Fort Hood families. Well, so, why not?
Right.
I mean, you know, those guys were actually on post down there at Fort Hood. You had a similar situation, a Muslim who'd been radicalized, and he went around and shot people and killed people. So why not? And I've talked to a few Purple Heart people and, you know, heard from some of them, and I haven't heard anyone in the Purple Heart community who says these people shouldn't get a Purple Heart. So I think we'll get this fixed. It's just a little change of the mindset over at the Pentagon.
Yeah. Well, there are protests in Russia now, allegations of voting fraud following the parliamentary elections there as Prime Minister Vladimir Putin makes a comeback bid for the presidency. Some are wondering if this could turn into an Arab Spring-like revolt in Russia.
Well, it could, and I think that this bears watching. Russia is a big powerhouse in terms of the economy. Really around the world, but definitely in that part of the world. They're a big energy producer, and they've had a lot of changes over there in the last 20 years. I'm not sure that their electoral process has really changed as much as we'd like, and that's really what this is about. It's not a very open country in terms of participation in democracy. I think now Mr. Putin is set. They say he's going to have an opponent, this billionaire who owns the New Jersey Nets or owns one of the NBA teams, says they're going to challenge him. I heard that on NPR yesterday. So, you know, there may be an opening there. And again, you know, this is maybe democracy in action. If that helps, if more people can participate in the government, have a bigger say in their government, you know, we ought to support that. But, you know, we'll just sit back and watch and see what happens.
A lot going on in Congress as you try to wrap things up, get away for the holidays. There were votes on two different balanced budget amendments. Both failed. You voted against both.
I did. And actually, I've never voted for a constitutional amendment. I've had several chances to do that. But I will tell you this, that I am open to the right kind of constitutional amendment on balancing the budget. Congress has a terrible record in the last 40 years. I think they've balanced the budget just two or three times. Maybe three or four times. But this is something that really is something that we should learn from Arkansas. Arkansas actually does not have a balanced budget amendment, but we balance the budget every year. The state of California does have a balanced budget amendment, and they're like billions of dollars in the red. So a balanced budget amendment in and of itself may not be a fix, but we need to change the culture here in Washington to where we get to balancing the budget every year. And if it takes a constitutional amendment to do that, we ought to do that. The problem that I saw with the two that were proposed, well, the one that was proposed I thought was really bad policy. They had a bunch of percentages in there about how big the government could be, 18% of GDP and all this kind of stuff. I thought that was bad because in a time of war or in a time of recession, our hands would really be tied, and I didn't think that was smart. The other one, had some, maybe it was a little bit better, but I still thought that it didn't quite hit the mark. It was a little too complicated, and, you know, the problem with these are that if you're not careful, you're really going to tie the government's hands. You know, we have to remember that our government started when our government started, we were in debt. You know, we were paying off the Revolutionary War debt. It's something we've had for a long time. And, you know, this goes way back. But we need to change the culture. And one of the concerns I have about these balanced budget amendments, both of them, is that they could lead to massive tax increases. Because at this point, what you do is you put something in the Constitution. It'd be subject to a court challenge. Someone goes to the, you know, to court and says, hey, the government's books are out of balance, so the court could either cut our spending or increase our taxes. And I'm not sure people want to get into the federal courts running the government. So, you know, there's a lot of problems here, but maybe we can craft one that, you know, that I could support.
Well, the Senate's still wrangling with the issue of extending the payroll tax cut. This is yet another issue that's become a partisan battleground.
It has, and it's unfortunate. But the problem, I think what you get here is both sides agree that we should or could do a payroll tax cut, and it actually would have a good stimulative effect on the economy. Economists around the country have said this. They said it makes sense. It would probably, prevent a second recession if there ever was going to be one. But and all the economists are pretty much on the same page that it's a good thing. But the problem is we need to pay for it, and we're all balled up on how to pay for it, and that has become a partisan battle. It's Democrat versus Republicans. The Democrats want to do a surcharge on income over $1 million. The Republicans actually want to do lots of sort of middle class and even senior taxes that, you know, basically are going to wash out the payroll tax benefit, you know. So, yeah, from my standpoint, let's keep this in perspective. We're talking about a payroll tax cut, so we're trying to put a little bit more money in Americans' pockets. This may just be like $10 or $20 a week. We're usually are not talking about a whole lot of money, but if we did that, economists say it would have a good stimulative effect. The challenge is trying to find a way to pay for it that we can agree on, and I'm struggling myself, to be honest with you. If the Republicans refuse to do the millionaire tax thing and the Democrats refuse to do the, you know, charging more for seniors, requiring flood insurance premiums to go up and all the things the Republicans are proposing, I'm not quite sure how we come up with the money on that. So I'm kind of participating in the conversation, but I'm not offering any recommendations at this point.
Well, you're trying to get things wrapped up this year in the Senate. How do you see things being left as we go into the holiday season, and what's in store for the next session in the new year?
Well, we have a lot of unfinished business that we need to take care of. You know, one thing I was looking at this morning is we really need to do the FAA bill. That's the Federal Aviation Administration bill. That's the bill that keeps all the planes flying and keeps the skies safe. That's a big infrastructure bill. I hope we'll do that at the beginning of the year. We're going to do an intellectual property bill at the beginning of the year and try to kind of get our intellectual property rights where they should be, and also try to protect U.S. copyrights and trademarks and patents overseas. The Chinese are really abusing this, so we're trying to find a way to do that, and that's going to help the U.S. economy just by making sure that we can protect property rights. So we're going to have a lot of things, a lot of pent-up business that we didn't get done this year that we're going to have to try to take care of early next year.
Of course, we're heading into a big election year, and the question is, can we really expect anything at all of substance to get done?
Well, that's always the question here. Unfortunately, partisanship has kind of taken over Washington, D.C., and so even some good government things that we ought to do, something like a highway bill or something like the FAA bill that I mentioned a few minutes ago, that people agree will have a very positive impact on the economy, even those basic things are hard to get done now. It's hard to get our spending bills, hard to do a budget. We haven't done a budget in 2 years because of all the partisan games up here. And everybody, from my standpoint, just needs to throw the partisanship, set that aside for a while. Let's really work together. Let's focus on jobs. Let's focus on getting the economy stronger. Let's do all the things we need to do. And I think there's lots of little things we need to do to try to get our economy where it needs to be. And that includes some regulation reform. That includes focusing a little more on exports and small businesses and agriculture. I mean, there's some real nuts and bolts things that we should do in Washington, but it's hard to get anything done given the hyper-partisan environment we have right now.
Well, just got a minute left. Of course, our nation seems to be so divided and divisive now in our political discourse. We've reached a point where, in some cases, it's dividing families. And we're heading into Christmas season, observance of holidays that are based on peace and goodwill. Let me get your thoughts about, you know, what your Christmas wishes are and your hopes for the new year.
Well, of course, I want all of our troops to come home safely from Iraq and Afghanistan. By the way, we spent $1.3 trillion in Iraq and Afghanistan, so these have been very, very costly wars. But I just hope that for the men and women who've served over there, I hope that they're okay in terms of their families and their psychological scars and the emotional scars they may have from being in war. I just hope that our state and our communities and everybody just supports them and loves them through 2012 and gets them back on track and gets them in the direction they needed to go. And, you know, this is a family time of the year, and we need to focus on sort of the first things, take care of our family, take care of our business, our personal things that we need to do. And I just hope that 2012 is a great year. 2011's been hard. 2010 was hard. I hope 2012 is a much better year.
All right. Well, I thank you for your comments today, and we'll talk to you again in the new year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Bye. U.S. Senator Mark Pryor joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.